This season on the What on Earth Can We Do podcast, we're diving into waste and the creative, community-driven, and sometimes high-tech solutions helping to tackle it. Today's episode is all about turning food waste into energy, and I'm joined by Glenn Smith and Kim Caron from EcoGrowth Environmental, a Calgary-based company that's developed a system to do just that. Their technology is already being used in places like hotels, care homes, and industrial laundries to reduce landfill waste, cut emissions, and lower operating costs, all by transforming leftover food into a local, low-emission energy source. It might sound futuristic, but as you'll hear, this solution is not only making a difference in Alberta, but across the world. Glenn and Kim, thank you so much for being here and joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
So we're chatting about turning food waste into energy today. So for people who are new to the idea of turning waste into energy, in simple terms, what does that actually mean?
So turning waste into energy, one, you have to understand what is waste. And waste is really things that no longer have a value. And once there's no value, we typically, in Canada, we send it to landfill. So waste energy is really taking that waste and putting it through either a incineration with oxygen or a gasification without oxygen and turning it into thermal energy. So that really is what waste energy is.
Can you guys tell me why food waste in particular is a good candidate for this kind of solution of waste to energy?
Food waste actually represents up to 50% of what we call waste. And food waste in general has anywhere between 75 and 80% water content. So when that material goes through a waste energy, you have to overcome the water content. And so that's why food waste is such a good candidate for our technology, because we actually remove the water through a primary process and then turn the dehydrated material into energy. And therefore, it's much more efficient because the water has been removed.
It's like upcycling both streams. So when we have the dry material, we can manipulate it into pellets or briquettes. And then the liquid material we found we could harvest. And this is after our first time meeting. We harvest the liquid and we use the liquid as a liquid nutrient. And that can be used very locally. And then we can, if you have to truck the dry material, it's 80 to 90% size and weight reduced already. But it's all about local solutions to keep a local solution so you don't have to haul it to an energy facility or anything like that. Use it locally, save money on hauling. And then if you have to haul it, then haul 80 to 90% less size and weight.
So knowing that this is a very efficient way for you guys to turn waste into energy using food waste, because you're able to take that water out of it and it's a little bit more efficient for you guys to dehydrate it. We've talked a little bit and I can kind of get an idea of what this process looks like, but can you walk us through how your system handles food waste and how it eventually becomes energy?
So our technology involves a three-step process. And we're looking for speed and efficiency in each step. So the first step, what we do is we put it through a mechanical press, the food waste. So it's size reduced through a shredder. And then we squeeze as much water out as we can very quickly. And the water that comes out of that stage is a high nutrient value fertilizer. So what we have left over is a consistent moisture content food waste. And that goes through our mechanical dehydrator, where the water that's evaporated away is actually captured through a condensate system. And that actually forms part of the nutrient water collection. So what comes out at the back end is a very dried, fluffy material that has an extremely high calorific value. And from there, we either pelletize it into a wood-like pellet or a briquette, which is a bigger pellet. And then that goes into our thermal energy recovery system, where it's turned into, it's actually burnt like a wood pellet stove. But what's different is the energy that's produced is captured in a glycol jacket, which then could be used to heat things like water or hair. So it's an extremely efficient way to remove moisture from food waste and then turn it into thermal energy.
So now that we have a better idea of how this technology works, let's talk about who's using this technology. What types of businesses, and what does maybe that look like within their business models, and what are they using the energy for?
Well, Executive Mat Service is an industrial laundry in Calgary, and this is where the example was born. We use the thermal value in our laundry water to wash floor mats, and it saves us money in direct hauling of garbage or garbage away from our facility. And two, using it as a fuel source in place of a fossil fuel actually derives a carbon offset as well. But it kind of kills two birds with one stone. We actually get rid of our waste materials, and it benefits us thermally by using it as a carbon neutral fuel source in place of natural gas. And it has a monetary value. When we use our waste streams that go to our dumpster in place of fossil fuels, we can save upwards of $100,000 a year on our natural gas costs that heated our water previously. So this becomes a way to use that cost and point it somewhere else to benefit us. And while we're doing it, we can offset landfill methane. And that's typically what we've become, is a landfill methane avoidance company by not landfilling anything.
That's incredible to hear that about that amount of savings, $100,000. Are other businesses experiencing that you work with? It sounds like Executive Mat Services this is where the idea was born, and it's probably still being used to this day. What other types of businesses, if you're able to share, are using this technology, whether they're restaurants or hotels? How are they using the technology?
So the communities and industries that are most interested in our technology have a strong ESG or net zero emissions commitment. And what we're doing is we're tackling one of the scopes of carbon emissions, which is called scope 3. Scope 1 is typically things like natural gas and fossil fuels for your vehicle. And scope 2 is electrical energy. But scope 3 is this big, wide range of carbon emissions from your suppliers, from your employees commuting to work and back. But what science is now telling us, one of the largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions is waste to landfill. And when particularly food waste, when it goes into landfill, it undergoes what's called an anaerobic decomposition, which is really it breaks down without oxygen. And it creates two things. It creates foul odors, but more importantly, it creates methane gas. And the science is now telling us that methane gas, when it hits the atmosphere, is 87 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So we want to stop methane from occurring in landfills. And if you're a corporation or a community using landfill for your organic waste solution, that becomes a huge part of your carbon footprint. And so if you're going to achieve your net zero commitments, you have to stop putting material in landfill, in particular food waste or organic waste, which also includes paper, cardboard, wood, things like that.
So it sounds like this technology could technically be used by any type of business as long as you're, you know, creating a type of waste that would be going to the landfill. Is that correct?
That is correct. And not every corporation or community have a net zero commitment. However, they're striving to reduce costs. And as the cost of trucking and disposing in landfills keep rising, well, our technology actually becomes a cost-effective alternative to trucking, particularly food waste, because it's 80% water. So you're trucking water, which is extremely heavy, long distances to landfill, and it's very expensive. So by removing water from the waste at the source, it becomes much more efficient in terms of not trucking water.
So I'm getting kind of a sense of, you know, now we know how the technology works, have an understanding of the type of businesses that might be using this technology. And, you know, we've heard that there are some really incredible economic benefits for the businesses who are using this technology. I'd love to get into the impacts and the benefits a little bit more. Maybe let's start with the environmental impacts, and then we can go into the economic impacts, the benefits.
So I can give you another example. There's an aged care group in Calgary. They have extended care facilities across Canada. They have a small dehydrator in a South Calgary operation, and they produce about 60 kilograms a day of food waste. And that got picked up twice per week. They had about 6 or 7 bins full twice per week.
Wow.
Picked up. And so about 14 bins a week went away. Once we put our dehydrator in, I go there once a month to pick up 4 bins of dehydrated material. So that savings alone will pay for that dehydrator in less than 3 years.
Wow.
However, that dehydrator has a scale on it. We put load cells, we call them load cells, but it's a scale that measures the weight that goes into the dehydrator. And that weight gets calculated before, so the wet weight going in, and then the finished dry weight. And that information goes directly to cloud. And then we use that information and plug in the emissions calculations and the emissions reductions based on landfill aversion. And that directly addresses and gives us a carbon offset. And that gives us a way to calculate that carbon savings and give people with an ESG a way to market it and potentially sell it. And this led us into getting our ISO standard. We've had our ISO 9001 for, I bet you, 15 years now. We just finished off our ISO 14001 2015. And now we have the auditors for the ISOs coming to see what questions they can get out of asking, because Kim has been asking himself those questions for 35 years. What is the best thing to do with that waste? How do we efficiently do it? Is it impacting the environment? Can we do something better with it? How do we make money with it? How do we turn it back into a circular economy? I mean, Kim's been doing all those things before those terms were terms. And I call him that crazy guy who paid for curbside recycling 35 years ago. And he's the guy who kind of spearheaded that whole movement, because one, he didn't like to pay to get rid of it. And there is so much, there still is a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors going on about what is the correct thing to do and people playing in this space. But the ISOs of the world are getting serious about it. And the people that are having ESG or a net zero claim, scope 3 is 80% of their carbon footprint, and they have to address it, even though a lot are not. And that's where the opportunity lies. They look at it as an, and don't worry about 80% of our carbon footprint, just put that in the back burner. We look at it as 80% of the opportunity that they can address and they can get ahead of, because bottom line is, it's still our carbon footprint. Whether we think it's going to the right place and somebody's doing something good with it, it doesn't matter. Prove it. And we've set out to prove that we're doing the correct thing. And we can measure that by weight.
That's really incredible to hear. And maybe just for the people that don't know, these ISOs that you're talking about, can you just unpack that a little bit, just for those who might not know what it is?
So ISO stands for International Standards Organization. And what it is, it's a series of management tools that you follow through your certification process to properly record and plan improvement. And it's all done with third-party consultants that help steer you through and certify that your activities meet the international standards. So based on current science, we can calculate the methane potential enhance the greenhouse gas emission potential for every kilogram of waste that's avoided from landfill. So to give you an idea, that care home producing 60 kilograms of food waste per day, which used to go to landfill, using the scientific method, they are reducing their scope 3 carbon footprint by over 200,000 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per year. So even though they're saving money on hauling and whatnot, which is a primary driver, but they're also getting much closer to achieving their climate goals and their net zero commitments.
So it sounds like this technology is a no-brainer to be within every organization, every business, not across just Alberta, but North America and the world. And I would love to know the current state of this technology. Where is it being implemented? Is it just within Alberta? Is this across North America? What is that looking like?
So we did compete in a Department of National Defense contest, and they were looking for camp solutions, particularly for mobile camps, where they could reduce their solid waste stream and reduce their energy consumption. So that was a five-year process that started off with close to 200 consortium companies. And after 5 years, they narrowed it down to three. We were one of the three, and we ended up winning the $2 million first prize. We were able to reduce the camp's solid waste by over 92%, and we were able to cover 200% of their thermal loads. So in other words, we were able to heat all the hot water for the camp requirement, and we had double left over that we had nowhere to put, so we put it to atmosphere. But in a winter environment, we would heat all the tents. We would keep all that energy within the camp. So that's opened up some opportunities in Europe, particularly with the NATO countries, the Canadian military themselves, and Arctic regions. And the Arctic is a real sore spot in Canada. High levels of poverty. Energy is typically diesel fuel. It's very expensive. And because of permafrost, the waste is typically just burnt in the open, creating all sorts of health issues. So we're in the process of deploying three of our systems to the high Arctic. And the idea there is to reduce the reliance on diesel fuel and improve the health outcomes from not burning waste on the tundra and creating more of a employment-driven solution for those remote communities. And that's our vision. The more remote the community, the more applicable this technology is. And so it makes all the sense in the world to start in the most remote Canadian communities there are, and then camps and whatnot, they can all use this technology.
Absolutely. Like I said, this is a no-brainer to me. And it's so incredible to hear about the success you guys have had that you just spoke to, Kim. And for someone who's listening to the podcast right now, whether they're in business, government, or maybe they're just a passionate person about sustainability, what should they know if they want to explore this technology that you guys have? Maybe they want to implement it. What are the first steps? How do they get started?
So yeah, definitely go to the website and all our contact numbers. You can do a submission right on the website, and that's eco-growth.ca. What we can do is help you with your scope 3 carbon emissions. We have a questionnaire that we give out to our new potential clients. And what that is just asking a question on what are your waste streams. And the waste streams that we want to know about are everything. So your plastics, your food waste, your cardboard, paper, wood. And we want to know everything because we can shred and size reduce most of those waste streams, including plastics.
Our vision at EcoGrowth is in the future, there will be no landfills because waste is simply a resource that we haven't looked at properly. So there should be no waste. And everything has a value and a purpose if you look at it properly.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I'm so grateful to you both for being here and talking with me about this incredible technology. And I'm excited for what's next for you guys and to watch you guys continue to grow. You know, the last time we spoke to you on the podcast was probably 4 or 5 years ago. And now to see the growth where you are today is incredible. So thank you both so much for being here. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Kim and Glenn from EcoGrowth Environmental for showing us what's possible when we stop seeing waste as just waste and start treating it as a resource. You can learn more about EcoGrowth's work or reach out to them to explore their systems by checking out the show notes. If this episode sparked something for you, send it to a colleague, a friend, or maybe even your office's sustainability team. These are the kinds of ideas worth sharing. The What on Earth Can We Do podcast is a program of the Alberta Emerald Foundation, a registered charity focused on accelerating environmental excellence across Alberta. To learn more about the Alberta Emerald Foundation, head to our website, emeraldfoundation.ca, or follow us on social media at Alberta Emerald. A big thank you to our sponsors who make this podcast possible: the Government of Alberta, the Forest Resource Improvement Association of Alberta, Pathways Alliance, the City of Edmonton, the City of Calgary, and the TD Friends of the Environment Foundation. See you next time.